All right. We are starting to record.
Wow. Suddenly belching, as I often do.
It's the demons.
You're expelling
the demons. That is in a certain circles, I believe.
Well, then I'm close to...
You must be very demon-possessed because you burp a lot.
No, I'm demon-free because I burp a lot. I must be expelling mine and you're not expelling yours.
Wow. Wow.
It's because I down carbonated beverages. Coke Zero is my addiction of choice. Uh-huh. That's it.
Hi, I'm Tracy.
And I'm Sharon. And we are Feet of Clay.
Confessions of the Cult Sisters. Why are you drinking, Sharon? Because it sounded like you were drinking.
No.
Yeah, this podcast has driven her to drink. Okay. This is going to be another first for us, Sharon.
Yeah.
We're doing something a little different on this episode.
Yes, we are. So a couple weeks ago, we both read two brand new books. Well, actually, Tracy read them first, and then she messages me saying that I have to read them ASAP. She can be really domineering that way, folks. Good thing that once upon a time, I learned how to submit.
Yes, you did.
I did. But before we get rolling here, I think it's only fair to say to our listeners, this will definitely be a two-parter. And I don't know, Tracy, you want to place bets? Can we hold it to two or is it going to go longer than that?
Two books, two parts. Let's do it
okay.
that way.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. So we're recording this at the very beginning of October because these two books were actually released in late August and early September. And frankly, I am pretty proud of ourselves that we finished two books in 1 week. I can't remember the last time I did that.
Yes, we did.
And I'm telling you, people, we read them. We didn't just listen to audiobooks. We read them.
And not only read them, but I highlighted quotes that I wanted to bring out, you know, so it was kind of almost like a school project, sort of.
Yes. It shows that we still have some brain cells left because I know my work schedule is pretty demanding and travel schedule, and you've had a very demanding travel schedule. So,
yeah, we did good, girl. Yeah. We did good. So, Tracy, why do you want to talk about these particular books here on our podcast?
Well, these are two very important books for people in and out of fundamental evangelicalism. And, you know, they're both chock full of the subject matter that connects to so many of our own stories, Sharon, and some of the stories of our guests that we've been having.
Yeah, what we hear from others. So one thing I want to preview is that both of these books show the overwhelming power of fear and guilt and shame as it is used to control and manipulate the behaviors of others. And, you know, that's a common thread throughout both books. And it's also what we've experienced in our own lives as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, that fear and guilt and shame, that was enforced externally by all the teachings and rules in our commune cult Last Days Ministries. But what I've come to recognize is that the even greater stranglehold was the internal enforcement that we did to ourselves in our own belief systems.
Yes, that's such a good point to punctuate.
Yeah. And, you know, so in these books, although they don't really call it this, I can totally recognize that both of these women who are younger than us, they definitely suffered some true trauma in the literal clinical definition of that word.
Wow, Sharon, that was really well stated. And we have so much to unpack here. Really, both these books were so chock full of stuff.
Yeah.
So what are these books? Our listeners are probably asking by this
point. Well, wait a second. Isn't it going to be in the title of the podcast? Maybe they already know it.
I don't know. Maybe our subscribers, this will just automatically go to the next one.
Okay.
So the two books, the first one is The Woman They Wanted by Shannon Bond Harris, which was published August 29th this year, 2023. Shannon is the ex-wife of Josh Harris, the I Kiss Dating Goodbye, Boy Meets Girl fame. Josh's books were published decades ago, and he became a key leader and a key name in the purity culture movement and a key leader in the Sovereign Grace, People of Destiny churches, and also which became embroiled in a sex scandal in the 2011 to 2014 timeframe.
You know, who hasn't been embroiled in sex scandals? You know, that's almost par for the course these days.
It is. You know, you got to chalk, if we're doing a competition, we got to chalk one up to Last Days Ministries on that one.
You know, you're right. We did not have any sex scandals. Nope, we didn't.
That we know of. So, yay.
Okay, yay.
We were all too afraid. Too afraid. Anyway. The second book is Counting the Cost by Jill Duggar Dillard, which was published September 12th, 2023.
Yeah, you know, Tracy, I did a double take when I heard her married name, because that's the same last name of two key leaders at Last Days Ministries you and I were both very close to, Wayne and Kathleen Dillard.
Yeah. Do you think there's any relationship?
I doubt it. That would be weird, though, if there was.
that would be. So Jill is one of the Duggar kids from the reality TV show 19 Kids and Counting, and then went on to have a couple names there, Counting On, a lot of counting in those series. Her brother, Josh Duggar, is infamous for his sex abuse scandal, including Jill herself.
Yeah.
And later was caught in a terrible scandal of child pornography crimes and ultimately convicted and is now serving time in prison. Mm-hmm. All this despite the fact that the Duggar family was held up in such high esteem and firmly rooted in the cult teachings of those great four letters that we always hear, the IBLP of Bill Gothard.
Tracy, woman, please, I beg you. Show some respect and pronounce that man's name correctly. He's Bill Gothard. He got hard keeping all those pure virginal young women so close by.
If you guys could see me, my finger is down my throat. It's just so creepy to think of him that way.
I know.
According to his own belief, he would not, has not ever been able to have a legitimate orgasm or even a hard-on, ever.
Well, wait a second. Wait. Maybe he could have a legitimate hard-on. I mean, he can't help that, but he certainly couldn't touch himself or do anything about it.
Okay. On to the books, because this is starting to go down a horrible path. Interesting how both of these women are in the satellite of two very well-known Joshes in the Fundy sphere.
Yeah. A tale of two Joshes. But this really is about the women, right? This is their, these are their stories. So I do want to say bravo to each of them, because they stepped forward. They're finding their voices. They share where they've come from, where they are now, and the very painful process they went through to get here. And to me, it's also pretty interesting to contemplate where they might be in the years and decades yet to come. You and I have both learned that awakening to all the bullshit, you know, this, it's really just the beginning. And I kind of think that as the future unfolds, Jill and Shannon will most likely become more aware of the depths of the trauma and mind fuckery and all that stuff that they have started to recognize.
Very, very good point. And, you know, for listeners, we've referenced it in several of our episodes, but Sharon and I got out of this mind fuckery over two decades ago. And that's when we didn't call it deconstructing. We didn't have a name for it. We just walked away.
backsliding. That was the name for it.
We were definitely accused and taunted for our backsliding. And I can't even imagine trying to write a book at that time. So soon after getting out of everything, I remember, you know, some days, you know, just telling friends, hey, I'm just trying to hang on to the fallout, right? To get divorced, to have five kids, to all that stuff. So we definitely need to keep that in mind for them throughout as we read those books. Mm-hmm. This is a long journey out and one, hopefully, where we never stop learning and growing. So this is their snapshot now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even now, decades later, I'm still just seeing the depths of some of the damage I left in my wake. So let's give some quick info about these authors.
Yeah. Hey, you know, before you say that.
Okay.
Yeah, Tracy, I'll tell you, it's funny because when we did our four-part series on purity culture, virgins and volcanoes, you know, I thought, okay, I'm really looking at that trauma I experienced with the arranged marriage and that whole wedding night. But I got to tell you, like just in the last couple weeks, as I've been working through and seeing some stuff, I'm recognizing some levels of trauma that are deeper than I even saw when we recorded that just a few months ago. So
Wow. You
are so right. It is an ongoing and unfolding process.
Yes. So listeners, be gentle with people's stories. They're out there, you know, starting this journey and we want to as well. So on to who are these authors and what are their books about? And keep in mind, We usually give a trigger warning. This one's a spoiler alert warning. A little easier, but spoiler alert. If you haven't read these books or if you haven't been following their stories in the news, we might tell you some things that you want to read the books first.
Yeah. And there's triggers too, right? I mean, there's sexual abuse, there's misogyny, there's child. Anyway, yeah. So it's a shit ton of shit. So, okay.
That's what our new spoiler acronym should just be.
Yeah.
Shit ton of shit.
Shit ton of shit coming. Beware, beware.
Oh.
All right. So the first book, The Woman They Wanted by Shannon Harris. So Shannon was born in 1974, and that was just 1 year before I officially got saved.
Wow.
I know. Put it in a time frame. So Shannon is now 49 years old, and we, Tracy, are in our 60s.
Mm-hmm. And we both did our deconstructing in our 40s, though, which is interesting.
Early 40s, yeah.
Early 40s, but interesting note, yes.
Yeah.
But we have to make sure that the listeners always know that you are older than I am. So...
Fuck you, Tracy!
I was earlier in my 40s than you were, just so that we're clear.
Fuck you, Tracy. Fuck you. Okay. So Shannon and Josh divorced in 2019. So she was 45 then. And I assume she began her deconstruction around that time as well.
Yes. The first announcement that I am aware of where Josh started publicly speaking was around 2019.
Okay. All right. Quick synopsis of that book. So Shannon's upbringing, she was not raised in a Christian family. Sometime when she was in college, she was invited to a church. She got love bombed. All of us who were once fundies and evangelicals, we know what we do when we do that, right? So she gets love bombed. She becomes a Christian. She gets involved in the whole People of Destiny International, whatever that was, magazine, organization, church. She's pulled into that sphere.
Yes. And I think I referenced them in a previous episode, but my ex and I were big followers in the early 80s mm-hmm. of People of Destiny magazine mm-hmm. and of the founders, whom we'll mention here in a minute.
Okay. So Shannon gets sucked into the whole purity culture thing, the subjugation, submissive role of women. She's introduced to Josh Harris. And there's a facilitated engagement, CJ Mahaney, right? He kind of sets this thing up. She dives deep into that hole, you need to deny yourself. She gets married. She gets deeper into the leadership structure of the organization. She starts recognizing that she is losing her true self and eventually has kind of an emotional breakdown of sorts. And that kind of catapults her to... really getting out, fully getting out.
Wow. Yeah. And there's so much, I'm sure, that you can relate to parts of that story about mm-hmm. having a marriage facilitated in a very public way.
Yeah.
I've been following the news about Josh and Shannon since they made their announcement. Quick backstory, you know, we had already followed pretty hard after our own purity culture, which we talk about in our purity culture series. But by this time, I'm helping to raise my nephew. who is older than my children, and he comes to live with us in his teens, and I take him to a Josh Harris seminar. Yes, I do.
That's Don, right? That's your nephew, Don?
Yes, my nephew, Don.
Quick sneak peek, folks. Don's going to be on an upcoming episode. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
Yes. No, that's great. It's a great plug. So we gave him that book. And so even though I wasn't reading that for myself, it was something that I was really connected to. And so I knew that Shannon's book was coming because I was watching all the news stories of basically Josh deconstructing and then their divorce announcement. And I have history with Sovereign Grace Ministries. So way back in my hometown of El Paso, before I even joined Last Days Ministries, that's how much of a teenage fundamentalist I was. I was already a part of a church that would eventually become part of the Sovereign Grace family. And back then, it actually became part of the People of Destiny International family of churches. Mm-hmm. Even before I went to Last Days, this church is the one that sponsored me to the Bill Gothard Basic Youth Seminar.
Lucky you.
Look at me. I feel like my life has just been one tour of the culty shit and how it all ends up coming back together. And so I didn't understand church splits back when I was a teenager. So a lot of it went over my head. But eventually they would go in hard with Larry Tomczak and CJ Mahaney, who were the leaders of this organization church at the time. And so very close friends of mine are still at the helm of the church leadership that's still connected to Sovereign Grace Ministry. So I was interested, very interested in what this book was going to say.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Second book. Counting the Cost by Jill Duggar Dillard. She was born in 1991, which means she is the same age as my twins, my youngest boys.
Wow. Yeah. Right in the middle of my kids' age ranges.
Yeah. Huh. You've got one younger and a few or four older, right?
Yes, because we were five kids and counting, and then we stopped counting.
You know what? If we could become a couple, Tracy, we would have 10 kids.
We could have a great reality show. That would be a great reality show.
Yeah. All right. Well, Molly and Rachel think we should be a couple, but, you know, they're wrong. Sorry, girls. You're wrong.
Well, you know that we're not, it's not over till it's over. There's still some years to discover. To discover things about us.
Okay. All right. Well, the quickie on that book, the Duggar family, as Tracy mentioned, they have this reality TV show on TLC, which I never saw. I did not see that show.
Yeah. And same nephew that we referenced earlier, his wife was just in love with this show. So she was always wanting to have it on. And of course, Don and I could never watch it. We're like, nope, we're out. We don't want to see this. And I don't think she quite understood it till now that she started to see the fallout of what's been happening there. So I never saw a whole episode either, but I was aware of the advertisements and the clips, and I could see all the little matching children in dresses, and I was like, I can't watch this.
Yeah. Okay. So Jill's parents totally bought into the IBLP bullshit, purity culture, suppressing women, et cetera, et cetera. So that whole philosophy was certainly a major factor in structuring their beliefs and all the crazy family stuff that went on. The oldest child, the brother Josh, he sexually molested some of his sisters, including Jill, plus I think a couple other girls outside the family. And it was totally covered up. Then a few years later, the sexual abuse becomes public, and Jill and her sister are forced to go on TV to do this interview to defend the family and, to some extent, their brother who molested them.
Yes, and that interview was on Megyn Kelly, and I watched that live again because I had...
Oh my God, was it live? Was it live or was it pre-recorded?
It may have been pre-recorded, but when I say live, I watched it as the first showing of it.
Oh, as it aired.
Yes, as it aired. It had a lot of attention. And of course, I'm coming from it expecting, and you'll hear us kind of say that in different times in our podcast, I'm expecting for something to happen because that lifestyle is not sustainable. It is just got so many stuff that we've all been, you know, the victims of. And so as this was then gaining this national attention, I absolutely wanted to watch that interview. Mm-hmm. And I think learning in this book, which I did not see, nor did I know at the time, none of us did, that Josh himself was in that room off camera during that interview. And, you know, even as I watched it, I didn't have all the understanding that I have now as we've been, you know, learning what it means to be traumatized by your abuser to that level. But I could tell this was a PR piece. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And my heart did go out to these girls because you could tell they were spinning the tale to keep this on the air. And that was heartbreaking enough. And then knowing Josh was in the room is a whole other level.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It's betrayal. It's betrayal from her parents not protecting her. It's just unthinkable. And poor Jill, seriously, I mean, the betrayals just keep on coming for this young woman. So the day before her wedding, her dad, Jim Bob, tricks her and the other kids into unknowingly signing a contract, which obligates them for years to come to be in these TV shows. And they get no financial compensation for it whatsoever. Jim Bob, the dad, he gets all the money. Later on, a few years later, when they become aware and they ask for a copy of the contract, Jim Bob flat out refuses, and he fails to even give them a copy of this thing that he obligated them to. That leads to Jill and her husband being prevented from joining a missions group that they had applied for because they have to show they have no legal entanglements, and they can't because their dad won't give them a copy of the contract. Then at the birth of Jill's second child, she experiences a real life-threatening medical emergency. She has a torn uterus. I mean, it's just horribly traumatic. She and the baby almost died. It's just really, really tough. Sometime after all of that, she does start to see a trained therapist. Then, and I think I've got this chronology right, but it might be slightly different, it's discovered that Jim Bob committed tax fraud, claiming that he paid his kids, but in fact, they never received any money. So Jill and her husband have to go get a lawyer and press to finally be given all the info so they can know where they stand. And it's somewhere in all of this that she begins that really painful journey towards freedom, getting out from under the control of her family, and kind of questioning and softening her own beliefs.
Well, great, great synopsis, Sharon. And for us who didn't really watch an episode, you could pick all that up from just even the few clips that they would show. It's just dripping with all of the stuff that we're going to end up talking about. And it's really a heartbreaker just to hear her talk through in this story and us on the outside just seeing what a, I want to use all the bad swear words, just thinking of what her parents, how they just exploited and took advantage of her is pretty chilling.
Yeah. You know, I saw the few little clips in the docuseries Shiny Happy People, but yeah, I never saw the Duggars TV shows at all. I'd heard about them, you know, umpteen kids and counting or whatever. Of course, that just made me sick to my stomach because I knew how fucked up that family had to be. I mean, we've seen it. We've seen it in person. You know that that's what it's like.
Yeah. And the weird thing is usually in those circles, they're not out to put themselves on TV. As a side note, we have a Last Days fellow member that also has 11 kids. And back in those early days, I remember him referencing a famous family that they were friends with and that he gave them both the thumbs up of they're the real deal. They're a really great family. And I'm pretty sure it was this family early on.
Wow. Interesting.
And that's That's all I needed. When that family gave this family the thumbs up,
like, oh my
for
God.
Reasons we're going to get into, you're going to know, like, no, this is not a show for me.
No, no. You know, I remember back in our last days time, hearing that phrase, the umbrella of protection. I mean, Jill talks about that in the book.
Mm.
I remember seeing the diagram and hearing the name Bill Gothard. Oh, excuse me. I have to correct myself this time. Remembering the name Bill Gothard and thinking, yeah, this is good Bible-based stuff, right? that's
yeah.
what I thought.
Yeah.
I did not know that much about all the diabolical details in it, but the term basic youth conflicts or these conferences, I'm like, yeah, that sounds good. But I don't remember hearing the phrase IBLP. So what made me want to really read this book, besides the fact that you know, told me I had to just about put a gun to my head, when we got to talk in depth with two IBLP survivors on our own podcast, Abigail and Chad. You guys can go back and listen to those interviews. And of course, watching that docuseries, Shiny Happy People, then I'm like, yeah, I'm all in. I want to hear what Jill has to say. But I tell you what, it also leads me to this point. I did find it really strange that in this book, Jill never mentions being in that documentary. Any ideas on that, Tracy? Why she might not have mentioned it?
No, I know that it was very brave of her to even go on that documentary as the only representative of the family. So
yeah.
I'm not sure if the timeline of these projects just crossed in a way that mm-hmm. one manuscript was done before the other thing. Not sure. But it really was when the docuseries Shiny Happy People came along that it gave voice and an in-depth look at why this show had bothered us so much.
Show meaning the 19 kids and counting. That
yes,
show
but it, you
yeah.
know, when we would see it and I would turn away and I was like, no, I can't watch it. Really seeing the detailed account of everything that Shiny Happy People brought out
mm-hmm.
punctuated it, right? It's like,
yeah.
this is why we hate this. And we know families who have varying degrees of this kind of mind fuckery going on.
Mm-hmm.
And really, this insight into the Duggars is just putting it all on display for mm-hmm. all of us.
Yeah, yeah. If folks have not watched that docuseries, it's really good.
And so back to these books, within the stories of these books, there are so many crossovers between the two stories.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, those crossovers are crossing over into the stories of our lives and mm-hmm. also evangelicalism as a whole, right?
Because
some people would like to say, these people, they're crazy, they're just extreme. And we're like, no. There are so many tentacles that reach across and to us. So that's what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, it's a lot to try to get our arms around, Tracy. There's a lot here.
There's so much here. And so many points to discuss. And I think sometimes it can be overwhelming, but Sharon, in your great organized fashion, you're like, well, how about we break these into topics so that we don't just keep rambling about, you know, a big bucket of, what did you call it? What's our new acronym?
Shit ton of shit.
So we're not just walking around the bucket of the shit ton of shit. Let's break this down into the little tiny buckets of the shit.
Yes.
So that we can have a coherent conversation.
Yeah, I'm glad you yielded control because, you know, that I like being in control sometimes. So, all right. Well, the topics are not in any particular order, just kind of as they came up for us, right? So we're going to be comparing the experiences between Shannon and Jill, the authors of the two books, and then also Tracy relating it to our experiences as well. The first comparison or contrast that I really want to emphasize is kind of the origin of the origin stories. So by that, I mean, Tracy, you and I, we came into Christianity in our early teens. We jumped in all the way, right? We did this immediate swan dive off the 1,000-foot cliff, no hesitancy, all for Jesus. We were radical. We embraced it fully, no questions asked. The harder it was, the more that was required of us, the more right it felt. And we realize now we were both escaping the pain from some really messed up families, including alcoholic parents. So Shannon, it seems, she came to Christianity through like social facilitation while in college. I'm not sure she started out as crazy all in as we were from the get-go. She did come from a divorced family, so that, of course, does bring pain and fear into the life of any child. So it seems that the promises of Christianity maybe offered safety for the future for her. Maybe that's what it was. And perhaps the extremism gradually kind of crept up on her, or she gradually crept into it.
Mm.
Now, Jill, of course, she was born into the fucked up fundamental evangelical extremism. So this poor girl, she had no choice whatsoever.
And throughout our discussions, we will be taking note of the similarities for sure. But also, what I have to contend with in my own life is that there is a difference for those of us, you know, Sharon, Shannon, me, who mm-hmm. chose to go all in. And then, of course, the generation of those of our kids' age who never got a choice in the matter at mm-hmm. all. From mm-hmm. the very beginning of their life, they were immersed in this with no choice of their own. So for listeners, if you're in that group, we do want to say again, we do see you. We recognize mm-hmm. how unfair that was, and we take ownership for our part in that.
Yeah. We are so sorry for what we and those of our generation did to you in your formative years. You know, we can't give you back what was stolen from you, but we can try to help the healing now. And that's why we're doing this podcast.
Yes.
All right, Tracy.
So the first topic, Sharon,
mm-hmm.
spiritual justifications and manipulation. Or we could sum it all up to say hubris. Hubris is like my new favorite word.
Right. Well, it permeates throughout both of the stories. And at the heart of it all is that sense of pride, the elite thinking that we've got the answers, we've got the best answers. And quotes throughout, well, Jill's book especially, show you how that sense of being set apart is at the heart of all kinds of manipulation and justification. And like there are times that they were convincing the kids along the way, you know, the Duggars were. And it's also part of Shannon's slide into extremism, this idea that we have the really true truth, right?
Yes. And that is the hook. And I know that we will be talking about that in more detail, but we definitely felt that from last days. And, you know, even when we followed the People of Destiny Church, that was the hook. We are the truly true radical ones that are going to live for Jesus in a different way.
You know, Tracy, the holier than thou, quote, holier than thou, that is really what we believed we were. We wouldn't admit it, mm-hmm. but that is the reality of what our mindset was.
Yeah. So throughout this, we'll be pulling out some of the quotes from both Jill's and Shannon's book. And, you know, one of the quotes that Jill gives is a really good illustration of that. And I'll just read it from her book, A Day on the Beach. It was one of those first moments that I remember feeling awkward about the difference between the safety of my family and the strange lands beyond it. I tried not to dwell on it too much. I told myself that whenever we were in situations like that, where we stood out, you know, because they're at the beach and, of course, all of their garb, it was an opportunity to be a positive example to others just by lifting life and showing others how true conservative Christians should live, set apart and unpolluted by the world.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. And, you know, that was part of, you know, why
wait,
we homeschooled.
Before you say that, do you remember going and swimming in the lake with our giant heavy t-shirts and shorts?
Yes, and the lake you're referencing was a lake on the property of Youth with a Mission.
Oh, so much fun there. So much fun.
Yes, and not all of the Youth with a Mission teammates wore big shirts over their bathing suits, but Last Days Ministries associates did.
Yeah, we were holier.
We were holier, you know, and we'll be coming back to that quote that I think is an IBLP I think it's a framed quote in the actual IBLP locations that says, others may, you may not. Mm-hmm. And that really captures the hubris and that sense of pride and elitism that is the hook for so many of us. And I know that was for us. Like, we didn't feel, oh, we're missing out because we have to wear these big t-shirts. We felt we're holier than these other people who aren't as enlightened as we are and are showing so much skin and stumbling of their brothers. It's interesting reading Jill's quote as, you know, she goes to the beach and they're all dressed up. And many people know that I raised my kids in Lancaster County, which is home to the Mennonite and the Amish. And so we were used to seeing all manner of types of dress. And so often when you would go hiking or if you went even to the beach, you would see the Mennonites there and they would wear their full dresses. And so it's interesting how each of us in our own group, like I never thought they were holier than I was because they wore long dresses, even though I thought I was holier than YWAMers because I wore a t-shirt. So you have all of this hierarchy going on of convincing yourself of why it is that your truth is the true example. I don't know. What do you have to say about that, Sharon? That's just, it's illogical and it's laughable if it weren't so painful and destructive.
It's true that comparisons, you know, you're not supposed to compare yourself with others, but we did. And you're not supposed to judge others, but we did. Yeah, I look back on it now and it's, you're right, it's laughable and tragic, both.
Yeah, and I think what then reinforces it is, you know, Jill goes on and there's another quote in her book, nearly every day we are getting emails from people who say they've been impacted. They've shared how they've given their lives to Jesus or started going to church again or decided to have more children.
Yay!
Just by seeing Christian values portrayed through the show.
Okay, I just got to say, that is, yes, that is the mindset they have. But it is just so, so not honest and not real and not true because they weren't seeing a normal family. They're getting subsidized by lots of money from the TV show. Otherwise, they could never do the things they were doing with all these kids. So they're not portraying an honest picture of what it's really like. They're sweeping child sexual abuse under the rug. And yet they're saying, but we are winning people to Jesus. So it justifies everything. And that's just part of that whole self-mind manipulation and justification. And it's just, drives me crazy.
It is, but it's so prevalent, right? Because we're dealing with that, you know, in different, even churches that some of our family members still go to. It's like, well, you know, lives are being changed. And from the outside, we know what that trajectory is going to look like. And I think somebody said it best, you're all welcome at the beginning. All are welcome in until we start to try to change you, right?
Come as you are.
Yes.
But you can't stay as you are.
You can't stay as you are. Yeah. And you'll see that technique and that love bombing that's happening until, like, Shannon is slowly losing parts of herself as she goes on. So one of the quotes from Shannon that led her into People of Destiny is, but no one else was doing Christianity right enough or hard enough or biblical enough. And that was what People of Destiny, Sovereign Grace, said about themselves.
Tracy, we thought they were good, but we were better. Last Days was better.
Yeah. Ugh. But that is part of the hook for us, is it really feeds that ego that we have of we're set apart and we know the truth. And then look at all this good. You know, we'll often hear from people after they listen to our podcast, but what about all the good? What about all the good?
Right, right, right.
And, you know, when you start to peel back the layers of what it means to live in this kind of sustained, the death to self, the death to self, you'll see how poisonous this is.
Yeah.
One more thing. I know we have to bring in the white nationalist political movement, right? Because that's what happens as well. Because in this, what you'll hear from Jill a lot is this subtle conditioning that if you are living correctly and if you are being set apart and if you are different, there will be persecution that will come to you. That's part of the deal. Quote Jill now, when you're doing what's right, you're always going to be persecuted. Don't ever forget that Jesus was persecuted and he never sinned once in his whole life.
I'm throwing another quote in there because they both kind of go hand in hand. Again, this is Jill. I told myself that people's confusion about Duggar family life was just another sign that we had been blessed by God with a wonderful opportunity to show the world how we live. So it's that, yeah, if you're persecuted or people don't understand or they think you're weird, that is evidence that you're doing right.
Yeah, and that's such a slippery slope. And when I get into the political movement, because what it does is it gives people permission to be rabid and hateful and racist and all manner of terrible behavior. And then when people backlash them, they're like, well, that's the cost it takes to be on the side of righteousness. In many ways, Keith had that, right? That's the thing that we're seeing is he was excused for some awful behavior, some awful interpersonal skills because, well, he's just being persecuted for Jesus' sake. He's the only one brave enough to say those things that other people wouldn't say. And so you basically have this conditioning to be a terrible citizen and a terrible participator in society.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it is. It's a mindset that allows you to block out any input from another source. So like the family with all these kids, people could be questioning or challenging or hell, even laughing at it because you're being so utterly ridiculous, or there's hypocrisy, or sometimes people are being just a plain old asshole, as I think we're going to see that Jim Bob tended to be at times. But this gives you something to hide behind so that you don't have to really look at what you believe and how you are behaving. So the persecution, martyr complex, it's a wonderful and powerful deflection against any possible input from someone on the, quote, outside of your cult, of your tribe, of your way of thinking. And really what it does is it short circuits your own critical thinking because it suppresses you from questioning yourself or wondering. And as you mentioned, Keith Green, he also used this. I mean, he was definitely into this. He used this type of thinking to plant the idea in my head back when I was 14 and 15 years old in high school that my parents might want to throw me out of the house because I was now following Jesus. And he says, the scripture talks about this. This is going to happen. And he said I should come live with him. So the more my parents were unhappy with my Christianity, the more I wore it as a badge of honor that I must be following Jesus the right way, right?
Yes. And then I don't know if you had to deal with that as you started to have more children, but that was something, you know, our first four children at least happened, what, at least in the first 6 years of our marriage. And so we were definitely getting that from extended family who were not in our belief system. And I also wore that as a badge of honor. Like, this is a sign of my commitment. This is a sign of my being sold out. And, you know, they would throw things out like, how are you going to have enough money to pay for all those kids? And we would laugh.
We trust God, right? We trust God.
Yeah. Again, we chose to go in and go in hard, but especially for all of us in, whether you're born into it or whether you've chosen into it, that spiritual justification, that slow manipulation, and that hubris that brings that hook in that just allows you to continue to do that circular thinking that continues to confirm why you're right. Because now people are actually pointing it out, and that's proof.
And you've got Bible verses to support it. The wisdom of God is foolishness to the world and all that other fun stuff. So here's a quick plug for another show we think you might enjoy.
Hey, I'm Rachel. A few years ago, I stepped away from my religious background. I had a lot of anger and a lot to say about evangelicalism and all the shitty parts of it. So I started a podcast to work through it and to feel less alone. A year into it, I asked my cousin-in-law to join the journey.
And I said yes. I'm Molly, co-host to the show. Turns out we had a lot more in common than just being in the same family. We were both raised in evangelical house churches in the 90s and 2000s. Talk about culty. We were homeschooled, culty, and we both left religion behind about 8 years ago.
So now we get together every other week and talk about the nitty-gritty that happens when you leave religion.
Everything from how to set healthy boundaries with religious family members, theology, hell, heaven, Paul, and how to recognize and heal from religious trauma.
This podcast is our healing process, and we're hopeful that sharing our stories, other people's stories, and what we learn along the way may help others heal too.
Religion leaves a mark on everyone it touches. Sometimes that mark isn't always positive.
Cheers to Leaving is the perfect podcast for anyone who's questioning their faith or looking to connect with others who have been there. You can find our show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. So grab a drink and join us as we say, cheers to leaving.
And now back to the Cult Sisters.
Which brings us to the second topic, and it all goes along. Like we said, all the topics don't necessarily stand alone because they bleed into each other. But that black and white thinking is very much a hook for young minds. And I see that you were 14 when you started to be, you know, enticed by Keith Green. I was 15. I know Shannon was in college where there is a lot of, you know, starting to question your purpose and all of that. And then, of course, Jill is just a young girl, even as she's growing and maybe having some questions. The black and white thinking is right there to give her all the answers that she needs.
And psychology, you know, looking at child development, has really identified that the black and white thinking really is a hallmark, an appropriate hallmark of early developmental phases, right? The right answer, the wrong answer, the absolutes. And it makes sense. And it's also something that's interesting how I think those who go hard into Christianity and set aside critical thinking, holding on to those black and white absolutes, it's very comforting. It's very easy. And you get the preachers from the Bible telling you more and more about it. And we want to be right. We want to know the right answers. We want to follow the rules. If we follow the rules, all will be good. It's the promise. You will be the happiest you could possibly be if you follow the rules and do it right. There's a quote from Shannon's book, "Living by principles is not living your own life. It is easier to try to be better than you are than to be who you are. If you are trying to live by ideals, you are constantly plagued by a sense of unreality. Somewhere you think there must be some joy. It can't be all, quote, must, and quote, ought to, and quote, have to. And when the crunch comes, you have to recognize the truth. You weren't there." This is Marion Woodman, Addiction to Perfection. And I want to say this denial of self is really part of the whole black and white thinking. It's part of that suppression of any of your own desires. And because you're suppressing your own desires and your own personality and who you are, you also then have to put everything in the terms of what does God want, right? Because it's got to be what God wants. And again, that's the black and white. And I find it interesting, especially in Jill's book, how many times that they need to pray about it and hear from God and what does God want? So you've got to find God's will for everything. You can't say, what do I want to do or what would I prefer? You have to say, I prayed about this and I think God is telling me, or I have a peace about this, or remember, I have a check in my spirit. Because we're taught that if it's from me, it is not good. That's the black. If it's from God, it is good. That's the white.
Yes.
So I must find a way to make anything and everything be about and from God.
Yes. And, you know, some people are more wired to be very successful in this system. You can see throughout Jill's book multiple times where she references she liked the rules. She was told, the only person you should ever kiss is the one you marry on your wedding day. I liked this simple rule, says Jill. it made sense to me.
Yeah, because, you know, it takes work, Tracy. It takes work to ponder and question and find your own internal moral compass. That can be scary if there's no absolutes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think for me, and I think maybe some of it is in your story, I also saw the fallout of people making choices that were very unhealthy and not good. Mm-hmm. And so in my young teenage brain, it was like, well, that's bad. Mm-hmm. And now the Jesus box is good. So let mm-hmm. me follow the Jesus box and I won't get addicted to alcohol and I won't get addicted to drugs and I won't, you know, have these painful relationships. And I can see that same thinking throughout Jill's book. Her parents taught her that the world out there was full of all these bad, scary things. And as long as she followed these simple truths, she would have this very blessed and successful life.
Yeah. And back to the immaturity of the all or nothing black and white thinking. Tracy, I think we have an interesting example of this. Maybe you can share with the listeners. Remember that time when my ex-husband, I don't think he was my ex yet, we were still together. He was talking about how if you, Tracy, rejected the Bible, the authority of the Bible and what it taught, there would be no controls over you and what you might then do.
Oh.
Can you talk about what happened?
Yes. And so, you know, we were in the black and white thinking till we got out of the black and white thinking. And then we had to confront or be confronted by all the people still in the black and white thinking. And
right.
one of them was Sharon's ex. And so he sent me this very long and lengthy letter that said, if I, Tracy, reject the foundation of the Bible as true, there is nothing now that's mooring me to my morality. And now there would be nothing that would stop me, Tracy, from taking an AK-47 into the streets and start opening fire. And that was his leap. You follow the Bible, you obey the Bible, you obey the rules. You now don't follow the Bible and it's just a free-for-all.
You're a mass murderer now if you don't follow
the Bible. I'm going to take that leap to becoming a mass murderer. I, who even at the time would trap spiders and free them, like I would try to let the spider live and take them outside. And so that was very much an extreme version of that black and white thinking.
Yeah.
But some people, that's what they think.
They do.
If you do not adhere to this, you know, it's a slope. It's a slope downward and it's fast.
Yeah. You know, another episode, we will dive into the ideas of why there absolutely are morals and ethics and societal connections that have nothing to do with religion, that have everything to do with being human, being a healthy human. But another episode, right?
Yes.
Next topic. Suffering as Christians.
Oh, ding, 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 ding.
Which is kind of along the lines, as we were talking before, about being persecuted and being martyrs. But this is a little bit different. This is not like what's coming to you from the outside. Well, some of it is, but it's more the sense of who we are and what we need to expect.
Yes, and I did a special ding, ding, ding bell because I would say this is really one thing that set a lot of people at Last Days apart. We embraced the scripture, the fellowship of the sufferings of Jesus,
mm-hmm.
and it became equated to our spirituality, the depth of the suffering that we would endure. Mm-hmm.
And to crucify really, the flesh, to
and
crucify,
to crucify
the flesh.
The flesh. And that is one topic that we share with both Shannon and Jill, and you can see it woven throughout their entire book, how they are being indoctrinated by that same message. And with that message, I mean, you can achieve all manner of suppression and oppression of people because they help you. They help mm-hmm. do the work.
That's right.
One of the quotes from Shannon's book, very simply, we were taught we did not belong to ourselves.
Right.
And, you know, that's the start of that foundation, right? We don't belong to ourselves. We belong to Jesus. And then if Jesus suffered, how much more are we also to suffer?
Mm-hmm. Here's a few quotes from Jill's book. "But I also knew that sacrifice was an essential part of serving God. Ministry sometimes requires sacrifice," Mom and Pops would say. Quoting Psalm 34:19, "Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivereth him out of them all." Mm. I'll go ahead and read another one of hers, or actually a couple more of hers. "All my life, I'd been taught that ministry comes with hardships, that following God inevitably involves suffering. So in some ways, this negative feedback was kind of a relief," right? That would be helping her know that, yeah, if I'm suffering, I must be doing it right.
Mm-hmm.
One last, "All my life, I'd been taught that suffering was good. For anyone doing the Lord's work, pain was to be accepted, even embraced." Now, I just want to leverage this one step further, okay? Because we're saying, yes, sacrifice and suffering. But do you remember Keith's song based on 1 Samuel 15:22? "To obey is better than sacrifice." So that's even more leverage for unquestioned, instant obedience. Because who are you going to obey? You're going to obey your leaders in the Lord. You're going to obey your parents. You're going to obey your husband. So that totally primes us for manipulation and mind control, because obedience is put even on a higher pedestal, a greater godliness than sacrifice.
Yes, and you'll see it very clearly through Jill's book and also Shannon, because that was a very important tenet of the People of Destiny Sovereign Grace Churches, was that obedience and that leadership structure. And if you remember, Sharon, one of the chilling interviews on the docuseries Shiny Happy People, they talk about this, and we're going to circle back around as we get further into this, but how this does prime you for an environment of abuse, a culture of abuse. Because if you've conditioned everybody that suffering is part of being godly, do you remember what one person said? They almost felt sad that they weren't one who had been abused, because they didn't have treasures that somebody else had developed. And to me, that is so important. And we're going to see that later on as we start to get into the sexual abuse scandal part. But this is not just your own personal trauma. This is setting a stage to develop an entire culture of trauma that will allow people to remain silent because they expect it. They welcome it. Ugh.
Remember that mantra also in that documentary that Michelle Duggar was so proud because she was getting this little toddler, this maybe 3-year-old kid, to say, "What is expected of you? Instant, joyful obedience." Instant, which means you do not have time to think. You are not allowed to think. Instant obedience.
Instant obedience.
Fucked up. Just fucked up.
It is. And we could see it so clearly when you're seeing this little child repeat those words. But that was very much at the foundation of Last Days Ministries, was very much at the foundation of Youth with a Mission teaching, at the foundation of Sovereign Grace, and clearly Bill Gothard's IBLP, conditioning a generation and a people to obey.
Yep.
And, you know, at the heart of that, we can't trust in our own heart, right? We have to obey what God says. I'm going to read another quote from Shannon. "The essential teaching is called total depravity, which teaches that people are corrupt at the core. Even the good that can come from a person is said to be God acting from within them and not the actual person."
Yep.
So you have this total obedience and this breakdown of any trust of your own internal voice.
That's right. Because your righteousness is filthy rags. You are the black. You are the black, and God is the white. But do you see God? No, you don't see God. God's put authority over you in the form of your parents, your husband, your pastor. They are the ones who are going to tell you the white that you need to find, the white of God.
Mm. Yes, which then leads into that great other saying from the IBLP docuseries. This kind of teaching basically equipped every father to be its own cult leader in his own family. Mm-hmm. And so that brings us to the cult leader that we all love to hate, Jim Bob Duggar.
Okay, wait. I gotta say this. I'm gonna admit one of my character flaws, Tracy. I am definitely guilty of holding a stereotype in my mind against anyone with a name like Jim Bob. So, Tracy, you've always been the better, more spiritual person. Help me out here, please. Help me.
I mean, I don't think I can be much help because I just want to say, can we all agree on how awful Jim Bob is?
Yeah.
And, you know, you could tell in Jill's story, at least I felt like I could tell that she's trying to be gracious, right?
Yes,
she's really not trying to lob missiles and blow things up. She's trying to go the extra mile to really call out those great things. And even in that, I think this book magnified his awfulness for sure.
And can I just say, I believe because she is early in her journey of coming out of the fog, she does not see it as clearly as it really is. I just want to be gracious and give that to her.
Yeah. And I mean, as mothers that we are and fellow women that we are and further along in this journey that we are, we're like, you have been so exploited and under the cult leader of someone who has taken so much advantage of you that it's not even borderline. Like, this is pretty shocking and chilling.
Yeah, because you can tell in the book that Jill really does love her parents. Truly, she does. Mm-hmm. Even though, I mean, just going to be honest, Jim Bob, he's a total shit when it comes to what's really important. And Jill's view of her father, we know that every child wants to look up to their parents, believe they are good. We want our parents to kind of be our hero figures, right? That's human psychology 101.
Yes. And that's what's been part of what's been so hard for me in all of this, because I look at the fathers in some of our circles, Sharon.
Yeah.
And they are the ones that were on the cutting edge of let's not use birth control. Let's have as many kids as we can have. And through time, we have seen, you know, so much of that similar kind of attitude of these are a group of nameless, faceless people that are my task to some degree, and not an understanding of their individuality, of who they are as precious people. And that's something that I've struggled with for my kids' sake as we have been divorced and moved on. And I have seen that this mindset now is still taking the fathers away from the children, and they're the ones who suffer. They suffer from the neglect. They suffer from the exploitation. They suffer from somebody else, something else has their heart. And I could see that and hear that all throughout Jill's story, and it did break my heart.
Well, kids also, if you really want to break down the quiverful scripture, right? As arrows in the hands of a mighty warrior, so are, what is the scripture? I can't even remember. Thank God I can't remember it anymore. But the whole point is the kids are tools. They are tools in the hands of the Father to do the work of God. They are not seen as their own individuals with their right to self-determination. They are tools. And they are used because that's what you do with a tool. You use it.
Yeah. And then, you know, for the ones in our circles, because listeners, we have talked about some of the pairings that happened at Last Days were pretty catastrophic for some of them. And many of them had a bunch of kids. And you see the fallout from that has been the mantra that Jill continues to say throughout the book, children are a blessing, children are a blessing, children are a blessing. But you don't see that that is how these fathers are relating to these children. And it's something. I know we're not talking about the Sister Wives, that other terrible show on TLC. That's actually a really big, significant storyline there as well. This man now has, you know, over 20 plus children, and it feeds the ego. And it's something like, I've got my city, I've got these, you know, these arrows, these tools. But it's all back on God, right? God is the provider, not me. I don't have to live up to all of these other obligations, and not even obligations, like joy. They're missing the joy somehow in all of these children.
You don't have time. You don't have time.
Yeah. And I think when they then have failed at these marriages, it's like they failed at a task, not the individuals that they may have failed. And you see that throughout Jim Bob's story. Every time there's a failure that, you know, is being broadcast throughout the nation, he is doing all of this double time to keep it covered up, to protect his empire. What he is doing, not thinking of the individual children being impacted. And, you know, one of the things as I was reading, because like Jill, you know, she's grown up and she's moved on, she's now a mother. But I think of all of those other little children who, even to the rest of us, are kind of like this group of no names, right? They're just these littles.
Right.
I think Jill even refers to them as the littles. And you think of their individual needs, and you think of their individual fears, and you think of the different things that they're having to struggle through. And it breaks my heart that Jim Bob continues to uphold this weird empire that just runs roughshod over each one of those precious beings.
That's so well said, Tracy. That is so, so true. You know, towards the end of the book, Jill talks about how she is really giving her father an out. She is saying how it must have been the TV show that changed Jim Bob. You know, he changed. But now, remember, this is a man who lied to his kids, who induced them to sign something. They had no idea what they were signing. Who committed tax fraud, and who covered up and did not report the sexual predation of his son on his own daughters. So I have to say that as you get towards the end of the book and you see what Jim Bob is doing, I think this is probably just revealing who the man Jim Bob always was. It just didn't have opportunity to be seen so publicly, but I don't think he changed. I think this is the essence of who the man has always been.
I tend to agree with you, because one of the things I've seen in this belief system is, you know, they're the first ones to get on the soapbox for family values, but again, it's a task that's being carried out, and you can see that, like, I was horrified, Sharon, even at the contract, right? The contract at the wedding. I was like, who is this person?
Right.
Like, who would do that?
Right, right. But, you know, here's another quote she says about him, because she truly does love him and look up to him. She says, he was the same honest, upstanding Christian man at work as he was whenever he was talking to us kids at home. So I'm going to turn that around and go, Jill, I think you're right. He was the same man at work and in his business as when he was talking to you at home, which means he manipulates, he deceives, he uses, he abuses, he bullies. And talking to you kids at home, when you were little and you were compliant, you didn't see that side of him because you were going along. He didn't have to be a bully to you because you did everything he asked. But as soon as you start having some sense of individuality, and as soon as you don't go exactly 100% along with his agenda, serving his needs, it changes and you get to see who he really, really is. And you can see that as how he protects his son, his pedophile son, versus protecting his daughters. In the ministry, quote ministry, you know, he wants to show the real life of real quiverful Christians, but no, it's not really the real life. It's altered for TV. He's providing for his family with the money that he gets from the reality TV, but other Christian families can't do that. He says his calling from God is to show how having as many children as possible is the real blessing from God. That's still all about him.
It is.
And he is controlling his kids. He's controlling his kids' behavior, their beliefs, their emotions, their finances, even as adults, everything. So in that sense, I agree. He was the same man in the work world and to the world as he was with the kids. It just lacked the opportunity to show what was really, really there.
Yes. And the agenda, you can see when you said agenda, that's really what it's about. And eventually she has another quote, because when they do finally have that opportunity to clash, here's what she says about Jim Bob in that meeting. His words were typically vague, designed to shut debate down, not invite it. So while there were a ton of questions that we, talking about Jill and her husband, we could have asked, nobody was saying anything. Our main job in these family meetings was usually just to listen. Substantive issues were not up for discussion.
Nope. That's parents controlling the children from the time they're born and thinking they can and should do it all through adulthood. It just fucked up, fucked
yeah,
up.
Yeah, with a God-given mandate, right?
Yeah.
With a God-given mandate.
Or at least a Bill Got Hard mandate, yeah?
And so you can't talk about Jim Bob without talking about his supportive wife, Michelle Duggar.
Okay, yeah. So Tracy, here's another dark piece of my heart. When I saw the Shiny Happy People docuseries and Michelle is talking. All right, so her cartoon character, sweet, submissive, high-pitched, soft voice. I mean, Tracy, it drove me fucking crazy. It drove me fucking crazy because I know what she's playing at. I know what she's playing at. And the sad thing is, she has done it for so long, maybe it's not play acting in her mind anymore, right? But it just makes me feel so agitated. I wanted to slap her, like, snap out of it, woman. Talk in your normal, real voice, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, you know, and that was something that we've heard about from the IBLP survivors, that they really do condition that in the women. And I know that you and I never had that. We were never conditioned to have a different kind of voice. But I was really on the pathway to try to have a quiet and gentle spirit, right? As scripture says.
Yeah. That gentle and quiet spirit that is so precious in the sight of God. I remember praying that too. I remember praying because I'm like, okay, I'm kind of loud and I'm kind of strong. God, please help me. Please help me. Because I did feel that I was not as precious in the sight of God because I was not quiet. And I was not gentle and meek. So, yeah, I get that.
And so I think that this is Michelle going to that level of trying to make herself what she thinks she's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And I never added the voice, but I did try to stay silent more often than not. Not more often than not. More often than I would have. Let me say it that way.
Than what was natural. Than more often than was natural for you.
Than more often than was natural. And particularly around the children, right? So that's why they didn't necessarily see stuff that, you know, behind closed doors is when I was more likely to have some of the more serious conversations if I disagreed with something. Mm-hmm. And we'll get into that. You know, Shannon has some wonderful quotes as she starts to unpack what that means to become smaller and to have a softer voice. But I think that's her answer to that. And I do remember my sister coming to live with me at one point, who had known me all my life, and was saying this to me of, why are you behaving differently around your husband than I know you to be? So I must have achieved enough of this quietness, enough of this subdued nature that she could notice, even though I never did the soft, sweet voice.
Yeah. One of the quotes from Jill in the book, she says, I also see Mom more clearly today. I see the myriad ways she cared for us when we were growing up, the sacrifices she made, and the depth of her love for people. I love her, respect her, look up to her. And I do think that is beautiful. I mean, we want to find the good in people. And, you know, I don't know Michelle Duggar's heart. I have no reason to doubt that she didn't truly love her children. And yet, the beliefs and behaviors that she went all in for were destructive to her children.
Yeah, and ongoing, were and yes. are.
Yes, were and are destructive, no doubt.
And what's chilling about some of the stuff that Jill says is, I don't know how many kids they would have continued to have, but it was clear that that got ratings and that there seemed to be a big push to have more babies because that's where the ratings were. And that's really what set them apart by having so many kids at the expense of their health and well-being and the burden and impact to the other children in the family.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, I stopped at five, but on my last baby, I was bedridden for a period of time. It wasn't even the whole 9 months, but I ended up having to get bed rest because, you know, the baby was planted too low in my uterus on number five. Mm-hmm. And my oldest child had to pick up the slack and start doing laundry. And that was something that was a wake-up call to me of, I could see this is not fair to my other children. Mm-hmm. I am not there for them. I am really, and if I keep having more kids, it's going to denigrate how much of a mother I can be to them. And thankfully, there was still a part of me that could hear that inner voice in me. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think that what they have at play is that her health and the well-being of their family continued to be sacrificed on that altar for ratings. To get to 19 blows my mind. But yeah. At the top of this podcast, at the top of this episode, I mentioned another family that knew this family. And I know that to be an element in that family, that they continued to have children, even in the face of some serious health issues with the mother.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, that is some evil stuff there.
Well, I'm going to say, I don't know that they kept having kids primarily for the TV ratings. I mean, they first got discovered by the TV producers. What, they already had 14, I think? Wasn't
12. Was it, I think it was 12.
12?
Maybe
okay.
14.
All right. Well, whatever the number was, Tracy, I think they were just so deep into this brainwashed shit that they were going to keep having kids no matter what, with or without TV. So
yeah,
maybe I'm not quite so cynical to think that it was just about the yeah. publicity. I think it was their belief.
It was, he seemed to take a special glee. And I think when she finally hit that last one where there was problems and that disappointment that there wouldn't be any more children is not because he really does delight in each individual. It is now become this, oh, this identity. It's
they have
very
to live up
weird.
To it. That is yes. there too, right? Like you've been saying, you have to trust God and have as many kids as God wants you to. All right. Well, now if you have physical problems with it and you decide not to, does that mean you don't trust God anymore? And now that you've been so public on a national and international mm-hmm. stage, how are you going to back off of it? And so maybe that part of it did play. But I do think they did truly, honestly believe it.
Yeah.
Two other quick things that kind of come with that. The reality show, as we've already kind of hit on, it really wasn't really real, right?
Surprise!
The money from the show, they're able to actually buy groceries that they like when the show producers are giving the money and filming them going grocery shopping. When they're not being filmed grocery shopping, nah, they're buying much less and crappier food. And this big, incredible house with the dual kitchens and everything, yeah, that money was given to them by the TV show, and the interior decorating and the furniture, all of that came from the television show. So kudos to Jim Bob for figuring out how to scheme this thing and get the goods for his family. But that certainly is not representative of the average, quote unquote, average Christian family that's going to have a dozen or more kids and try to survive on one income. I mean, holy fuck. You know, it just was not really real, but they want to show it as that. And
as real, yeah.
As real. And yeah, the TV producers, they know this is just entertainment, and that's why they'll do retakes and staging and all of that kind of stuff. So back to that spiritual justification that Jim Bob says, this is our mission, this is our ministry, because we're showing the world what a real Christian godly family looks like. No, the fuck you're not. It wasn't real.
Right. It wasn't real. And it crossed over into a machine very quickly, right?
Yeah.
So then
yeah.
It becomes a machine that it's hard to extricate yourself from.
Yep. So all these kids, right?
Yeah,
all
because and now kids. It's your livelihood. Now yep. It's your livelihood.
Now it's your livelihood. So all these kids, Tracy, we kind of already started on it a little bit. You and I both bought into the no birth control. I was slower to the party than you.
Yes, but you caught up to me very quickly, so you get points for that.
Thank you.
You know, and I think that's why I had such an aversion to the show, because there were so many bits and pieces in my life that crossed into that. And they were definitely extreme. I mean, by most families, that's why they had a national TV show, right? They were in the extreme part of the spectrum on that. But the whole term parentification, you know, kind of
yeah.
has come about.
I hadn't ever heard that term before all of this, Tracy. And it's, yeah, it's chilling. It's real
it
and
is.
It's chilling.
And it's that belief when you have all these children, well then, especially the older daughters, they're going to be raised to learn to take care of the younger babies because that's their purpose anyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're going mm-hmm. to be. Eventually getting married and having babies of their own. And I bought into that. I remember reading an article or something that talked about, you know, how do you ease the burdens of homeschooling? So here I am with four kids under five. Eventually my fifth one comes along. He is needing to be homeschooled. He's on a very different educational path than the older kids. And so the answer is, will you bring in the older kids to teach him?
Mm-hmm.
And it sounded like a great idea.
It's like Little House on the Prairie, right? It's like, oh, isn't
yes.
that sweet and wonderful?
And it's like, you know, how better to learn a subject than to teach a subject, right? There was definitely some logical things that I thought this is a great idea. And thankfully, my oldest completely pushed back on this. I mean, vehemently pushed back and said, I am not teaching your kids how to read. And again, I want to bring us back to, remember, I wasn't raised in this, so I didn't have indoctrination going back to my childhood. As a matter of fact, my mother and father were raised Catholics themselves, and my mother came from an environment where she had a lot of large Catholic families that she went to school with. And one of the things she used to say to me growing up, just randomly, because we lived in military housing and there would be families with six and seven children, she would often say, it's really unfair for the older kids in those families. It's really unfair that they can't have a childhood because they're having to take care of the younger kids.
Mm.
And she would bring that up in several different circumstances, and that always stuck with me. And so when I was on bed rest, my mother's wisdom was churning around in my head. This is unfair. This is unfair to your kids. And when my own daughter pushed back, I had something besides indoctrinated fundamentalism to draw upon.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's part of why I was able to eventually break out. And I think of Jill and what she's had to go through. She never had
yeah.
that. Like, this has been her life from the beginning.
It's been her life. And actually, here's a quote from her, and it just breaks my heart. Let me just set this up. It breaks my heart because her whole life, the idea of having as many kids as possible is evidence of God's blessing. It's evidence of your obedience. It's evidence of your dedication. It's what makes life worth living. It's everything. And here she is having a real possibility of, with her second child and all the medical problems, that might be it. And now her whole sense of identity and being able to be pleasing to God and being able to be a good servant of God, everything rests on this have a shit ton of kids. And so this is what she said when she was wrestling with, can I just be happy with the two kids I had? But in my world, big families were everywhere. If you didn't have one, then there was probably something wrong with your body.
Wow.
I hated that I could still feel the involuntary recoil at the stigma. I had always been told that we should, quote, trust God. It's heartbreaking to read her heartbreak.
Yes. Wow. That really is. And I think of Abigail when she was sharing her story with us from the IBLP and that stigma that she definitely could identify with because her family came into it later.
They only had two kids and you couldn't hide.
And the stigma.
So your lack of faith. Yeah, your lack of faith in God, your lack of obedience to God, whichever, is right there on display for the whole world to see because they can count them. Oh, only two kids. Yeah. So this actually transitions into the next topic, which is the whole financial impact of all of this.
Which is a big one for me, Sharon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we decided out of the gate not to use birth control when we got married at Last Days Ministries, which was going to be interesting because that would take me out of the workforce once I had a baby. But even then, it was a little bit easier because we're at a ministry that, you know, our food and board and everything is taken care of, right? Mm-hmm. But of course, another episode, ministry blows up and we are suddenly launched from this ministry 7 months after we're married to make our way in the world. We're like the three little pigs and the house gets blown down. Go make your way into the world, little ones. And, you know, thankfully, my ex did have a college degree. And
wait,
you were pregnant?
You were pregnant when you
left? I was pregnant when we left. Right. I was 7 months pregnant when we left. We had no health insurance, no job. No place to go, right? Mm-hmm. So we had all of that to figure out. But of course, my job is to have the baby and to care for the baby. So it was never even on the docket that I would work outside the home. Mm-hmm. So the toll that takes, and that's just the first one, but we ended up, I think, paying off the first one for 4 or 5 years because we had no health insurance. Mm. And so, you know, as time marched on and we got to number five and it's still on one income, it became increasingly stressful. So I could really relate to some of Jill's stories as she's talking even before they had the TV show. And she mentions kind of eating beans and you could tell that the diet was not very good because, you know, what was he doing? They had 12 to 14 kids at that time before the TV show. And we had five. And it was a huge financial stress. And of course, my ex, I don't think is allowed to have stress because that would be unbelief. So he just internalizes it and buries it. Mm-hmm. And I am feeling I can't spend this and I can't spend that and I can't have this and I can't do that. And so even in that environment, you have just resentment starting to percolate. You have children that you're seeing are going to have to go without because there's just not the financial means. And so I see the appeal to Jim Bob to have this deal that could help them out of some of their financial difficulties.
Yeah, I remember. There's one thing where she talks about how when the TV show was being filmed and some of them had to go out and run errands in town, you know, whether it was taking kids to, I don't know, music lessons or dentist appointments or something like that. When the TV filming was going on, they were given money so that if the littles, as they called them, the littles were hungry, they could stop and buy them some food. But when the TV show wasn't filming, they had to take like a crock pot of chili or beans in the car with them so that during the course of the day, if the kids got hungry, they could just spoon out these beans to them because they didn't have the money to go grab a couple burgers. So yeah, the financial strain was really real, and that's why the reality TV show was not really real.
Yes. And the financial stress for these families that are supposedly watching this and now all having is a big dark side that's not talked about. And right. I know that as I started posting on Instagram some of my story, I was surprised at how many people messaged that said that that was their experience too. I mean, kids that didn't have, you know, they couldn't do any outside activity. So then the home becomes everything. You can't afford any kind of music mm-hmm, lessons or mm-hmm. you can't afford any kind of dance lessons. You're going to the restaurants, which is a particular story that I thought was hilarious because we did it, where you find those places where kids under five eat free. Mm-hmm. And you build that into your, you know, weekly treat for the children. And, you know, one of the things that they said that was a step too far in that documentary is they prided themselves on basically, I think, sinking the restaurant on that. I think that's a terrible, terrible thing. We did not. Right. We were really grateful. But, you know, looking for any kind of freebies in the area just to help give a balanced childhood to kids. It's tough.
It is tough.
Very, very tough to make it on one income with any amount of multiples of children.
But Jim Bob's empire helped change that all because the money started flowing. And the kids did not, even the adult kids on whose backs this show was being carried for the ratings. They did not get any of that financial benefit, but boy, he's he's raking it in, right? He's buying rental properties. He's got airplanes. This is one thing Jill said. I didn't want to ask how much the plane had cost or where the money had come from. Now, Tracy, you and I, we've had some very personal experience with a famous public Christian figure making more and more and more money, and then justifying the expense of a small airplane or two.
Yeah, it's I mean, it's human nature, right? You see it, but the difficulty in this is you're claiming godly ministry while you're being sucked down the tube of the greed and the machine that you're willing to feed your own children to make it. And that's, you know, apart from the criminal things that we'll actually talk about, is the criminal part of this too. This is on the backs of, aren't these children a blessing? Aren't we just so godly? And it makes your stomach turn.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, all that financial malfeasance that we will, well, we've kind of touched on it. And I'm going to just recommend the book, folks. It's really worth reading. Both of these books are really worth reading.
Yes. And if you can read those books before we pick up with part two of this, then you will be able to follow along even more closely because we have more topics to get into. Some of the stuff that really hits close to our heart, child abuse, and then, of course, unpacking women and our empowerment.
Or disempowerment.
The disempowerment.
Yeah.
Yes, which Shannon does a beautiful job of really writing some beautiful quotes in. So
I'm going to shame people. I'm going to shame people. I'm going to do it right now.
Shame people.
Yeah, we read both those books in 1 week. So you folks, you have 2 weeks in which to read those books, but you don't really have to. Nah.
Yes, because we're going to unpack kind of the key points and so we'll end it for here and we'll take it up with part two where we'll go into even more detail, Sharon.
Yes, we will. Hey, people, thank you so much for listening. And if you could do us a big favor, whatever podcast platform you are on, please go in and give us a rating. And if you have another moment or two, just even a few words of review. When you do that, it helps us move up in the, I guess, search engines. You know, I'm not techno savvy, Tracy. I feel like I'm a parrot just saying words I don't understand.
That's never good. That probably got you into trouble at one point in your life.
Anyway, but rate us and review us and tell your friends about us, please.
Yes. And, you know, I put in here, I feel a little cringy saying that because we're not out to get anything from this. We are just out to share our stories. But it is a lot of work to go into sharing all our stories. So the more people that can hear them, it just makes us feel better. So go out and rate us and review us. It doesn't do anything for us financially. It just helps us put this together. So
it makes us feel validated.
It makes us feel validated. That sounds so terrible.
Oh, man. Okay. I think we should just say goodbye, Tracy. Oh, except
okay, I think we should.
Instagram, feetofclay.cultsisters. She's always putting up crazy stuff, so enjoy.
See you in a couple weeks.
Bye-bye, everybody.